Hello, Diddly Dum. This is Peter Capaldi. I play the Doctor. Diddly Dum, 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 Diddly Dum.
Hello, faithless sisters, and welcome to episode 82 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Hayden.
And I'm Mark.
Alan can't be with us this week, but we shall forge ahead nonetheless. Any news being around? We have lost a couple of people, haven't we?
Yes.
Since last we spoke. And not least, the fair Deborah Watling.
Oh, God, you had to remind me, didn't you? I completely forgot about Deborah. Oh, I know. 69.
Who has played a significant role in your love of Doctor Who.
Formative years as a thieving bastard, yeah. Yeah, she was the very first Doctor Who companion I ever met, her along with her father, Jack Watling, and I met her on several occasions as an adult, and the thing that I'll always remember about Deborah Watling was just how great a memory she had. This is actually something that I've spoken to with other fans who have met her in the past, but on every occasion we said, I met you at this, or I met you at that. She said, oh yes, I remember, yeah, that was around about the time that this came out, or that came out. And she just had an impeccable memory and seemed to sort of always be able to, even if she didn't remember your name, she seemed to remember your face. You know, a wonderful ambassador for the programme at home and abroad. You know, and she will be sadly missed, I'm sure. And I think, Mark, you met her last year, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Is there a podcast that comes on where I don't mention Sci-Fi by the Sea?
Oh, have you been to Sci-Fi by the Sea?
I think I mention it every podcast, don't I? Last year's was Sci-Fi by the Sea 4. Yeah, actually, I mean, that was a bit of a sad occasion, really, in a way. It was lovely to get to meet her, but she was sat at the signing tables next to Brian Croucher, and either one side of them was the lovely Eve Miles, and on the other side of her was Katie Manning. And Katie Manning and Eve Miles both had these huge, massive queues. Eve Miles, probably because she's quite current, and I think she was in Broadchurch, was she? I never seen.
Oh, she was in the second series. Yes, she was, yeah.
And Katie Manning always has a long queue because she takes 10 minutes with each person who queues up to hug them several times and talk nonsense to them. And there was nobody queuing for either Brian Croucher or Deborah Watling, which I found very odd, especially Deborah Watling, seeing she's Doctor Who companion. But I guess she's a bit earlier, isn't she? And not so many of her episodes exist, whereas Joe Grant's complete.
I suppose that's in a way. Eve Miles has been in stuff much more recently.
Yeah.
Katie, she doesn't actually look that much different than she did when she was on screen, does she?
No.
It's recognisably Katie.
Yeah.
Whereas I think people would probably struggle to recognise Deborah. Victoria in Deborah, unless they were specifically a big fan of the Troughton era. I must confess, I could easily walk past her to reception.
Convention.
And unless I look closely, probably forget not to realise, oh, that's Deborah Watling. And Brian's only been in one Doctor Who thing, hasn't he?
Yeah. And Blake Seven, obviously. But Brian Croucher's more famous for his EastEnders work these days, isn't he? So
I would have felt terribly guilty. Obviously, Faithless Sisters, you'll be familiar with my Damascene conversion to conventioneering. But one of the reasons why I always swore I'd never go to podcasts is I would feel awful. I would feel I had to queue at Deborah and then Brian's tables. Whether I wanted their podcasts, their autographs or not, just so they wouldn't feel left out.
Yeah, well, I queued up for them anyway because I was very keen to get both of their autographs. Deborah Watling was lovely, though. She looks a bit bored, can't blame her. And she actually seemed a bit subdued, I thought, at the time. But that's, you know, to be fair, she was sat in a school field at an empty desk doing nothing, so.
Oh, we've all done that.
Yeah. But she was lovely. Signed my photograph for me and posed for a photo with me, which I showed a friend yesterday, and he said, blimey, she's tiny, isn't she? Also, do you remember me saying she seemed a bit frail and stuff like
that? Yes, I do, actually, yes.
And we did wonder at the time if she was...
Not in the best of health.
Yeah. But, you know, she's still very friendly. One of the things I found out that I didn't know was that when reading through a lot of the tributes for her, there was on some of the Facebook forums that I'm a member of, the Doctor Who ones, they'd had like threads that were people putting tributes up and writing their memories about her. And there was somebody put up a bit of an interview that she'd done where she was talking about her relationship with Fraser Hines. And apparently they did actually go out with each other properly, which I wasn't aware of. No, neither did I. I didn't know that until I found that revelation quite... I quite liked it, really. I think it adds... when you're watching it, I think it adds an extra dimension to their chemistry when you watch them back on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, it's quite touching how they stayed friends over about 45 years, you know, that followed. So, yeah, rest in peace, Debbie.
We've also lost Trevor Baxter, who I've just Googled him, and the first Google option that came up was Trevor Baxter, electrician, Wivenhoe. There we are. Trevor Baxter, the late electrician who used to be an actor in Doctor Who. Oh,
really?
No, of course
not. I was going to say. Blimey.
Trevor Baxter, who played Paps. I heard someone say this the other day, and I thought, oh, that's true, isn't it? One half of when you see a Robert Holmes double act, this is probably the one that first springs to mind, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
As Professor George Lightfoot. Have any of you tried the Jago and Lightfoot Companion Chronicles from Big Finish for them?
I listened to one in which they team up with Colin Baker, which was quite nice. That was a really good dynamic, actually, between those three characters. But I must confess, I mean, I'm not really as sort of... I'm not as up to speed with Trevor Baxter and his work as I am Deborah Watling. But I mean, I know that there is arguably less to go on. But, well, actually, no, probably not, thinking about it, considering just how many Big Finish audio plays that he did. But, yeah, I've not really got much to say about him, I'm afraid. So I shall let you two have the floor for this one.
Mark, you listened to any of them?
No, I haven't, I'm afraid.
Well, I never bought one of those box sets, but they did star in one of the second series of Tom Baker Adventures on Big Finish, in something called The Justice of Jalxar, a monster name which you imagine is someone just puts a blindfold on and randomly types at a typeboard. But a typeboard? A keyboard? A typewriter keyboard? And I found it hilarious. The plot was something that didn't bother me in the least. It's essentially the Fourth Doctor had gone back to Victorian times, bumped into them doing a sort of Sarah Jane Adventures thing, carrying on fighting against strange and unusual things. And it was just very, very funny. The other bit of news that's, in fact, it's unfortunate, none of this news is very nice, is it? There's been Peter Davison's departure from Twitter.
God, yeah.
Although I'm not sure he's formally, I don't think he's cancelled his account, has he? He's logged out of it and stopped using it.
Well, this is the press looking for a story, isn't it, unfortunately, I think. I mean, it's having seen the comments that he made, I actually think they were quite balanced and fair, but unfortunately there's still great swathes of fandom, it seems, who are, I don't know, just sort of, they're reacting in a very extreme way, whether it be towards pro or against Jodie Whittaker and a female Doctor going forward. I don't think there was really anything wrong with it. I mean, he actually said in the interview, I'm sure there'll be links in the show notes, but he actually says in the interview, you know, I might be an old dinosaur, you know, but it might be, this is great and well done for her and everything, but for me, I don't think I would have liked a male Doctor. And that's fair enough. I mean, there's a lot of us who have watched the show for decades and we've all grown up loving this sort of male role model, not in the sense of male and female role model, but just this man who we've all looked up to, and now things are going to be different. But it's a road bound with trepidation, which we get to tread down, really. But I'm sure it'll all be fine. But the only problem is that the press needed a story, and Peter Davison, the well-known actor, opposes it, and you know, his immediate successor in the role is very much for it. Is something which is very much constructed out of nothing, really. It's what the hacks do, I'm afraid, mates.
I'm sure he'll return to Twitter one day. In fact, it does occur to me that if I was in his position and I was hacked off at what arseholes some people were being, perhaps the best way to get back at them would be to sort of semi-retire from Twitter and thereby cause a sort of, shall we say, a backlash against the backlashers.
Yeah. I haven't got around to listening to our last podcast yet, but I think we alluded to him being a bit anti the idea, didn't we? I can't remember. I'm not sure that interview had even come out yet when we made that podcast, had it?
I don't think it had, no, because we recorded... Was it the weekend after? I think that it was San Diego Comic Con, and that's obviously where this sort of storm in a teacup started.
I think he'd made a vague sort of plea for people to not have a go at... So if people aren't happy with the change to a woman, don't have a go at them. You know, it's not fair. They may have perfectly good reasons for that reticence. So it's, it won't help by having a go at them. I think Janet Fielding may have responded to that a bit churlishly, or perhaps jokingly, because that's their dynamic, isn't it?
They announced it after the tennis on Sunday the 16th, didn't we? And we recorded that on Tuesday the 18th. So it was only 2 days after.
Yeah, I think the comments were the ones from San Diego Comic Con, or they were from a convention somewhere, weren't they? He was doing a panel.
Well, no, they were San Diego Comic Con, but that wasn't the weekend that it was announced. It was the weekend after San Diego. I'm sure of it. Yeah.
Anyway,
but also it's a shame because one of his things that he said on his farewell Twitter feed was about the negativity and it not being fun, and I suppose it's different if people are tagging you into the conversation all the time. You can't help but see it. But I'll miss him because I have a really positive, happy Twitter feed that when I'm feeling a bit down and stuff, it usually cheers me up to go on there and read through. And there's usually lots of lots of humour and fun going on. And he was a part of that, actually, because I used to find his Twitter things quite...
uplifting.
Yeah, well, he's just part of the... On Twitter, he's one of the good guys. So I'll miss him. I did see something that made me much happier today, though.
Oh, carry on.
I was looking through Twitter and I saw a picture of a diminutive pop princess wearing a Fifth Doctor cosplay. It was Kylie Minogue, Australian songstress. At first, I thought, oh, she's wearing Edwardian cricket gear. I thought, that's a coincidence, isn't it? And I looked at the photograph a bit longer, out of investigative purposes only. And I noticed that the tiny skirt she's wearing had exactly the same pattern as Peter Davison's trousers. And she's even got the white sand shoes on. And she's got exactly the right jumper on with the trim. The trim's spot on. And I thought, well, that can't just be coincidence, can it? And it turns out that her stylist is a chap called William Baker. And he's a massive Doctor Who fan. And this was a shoot she'd done for her calendar. So she's properly done up in Peter Davison Fifth Doctor cosplay gear, and she looks great.
So, Mark, these investigative purposes, is this the reason why the Whosium toilet was engaged, let's say, for a good chunk of this afternoon?
We're not broadcasting that.
That's a brilliant picture. There's also, it marries up very well with that picture of Davison sitting in the deck chair.
Yeah.
Into sort of that sort of reveal, that costume reveal thing. So it's from way back when. No, it's lovely picture. I've got some positive news as well. I was wondering if I could divulge with the listeners.
Please do.
I have a book coming out in the next couple of months. And it's all about Doctor Who, as you can well imagine. It's called Child Out of Time, Growing Up with Doctor Who in the Wilderness Years. And it's essentially that. It's an autobiographical piece about being a Doctor Who fan during the 1990s and growing up while the TV show wasn't on air. And I've got some very special people who are helping me out with the book. None other than my esteemed colleague here, Mr. Doc Hume.
I didn't mean sound underwhelmed. Sorry.
I can assure you, faithless listeners, that Hayden must definitely have been obsessed with Doctor Who when he was a schoolboy, because he certainly didn't... speaking as someone who's proofreading the manuscript for Hayden, he certainly didn't concentrate on punctuation in his English school lessons.
Thank you for that, Doc. Yes, that's... Please do not let that sway the impulse to buy the book there. That we've also got...
Don't put that on the cover.
Yes, please. The good Doc is not the only person who's helping me out with this book. We've also got Paul Mars, Doctor Who writer and artist, who has kindly provided the cover artwork. And also a foreword written by a former Doctor Who writer, of whom I'm not going to divulge until next episode.
Oh.
But yes, this should be out in the next 2-3 months, I reckon. So stay tuned for that. And if you'd like to see any updates, then please find me at haydengribble.net or just my Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/haydengribbleauthor, all one word.
Links in the show notes, of course, and of course we shall share and retweet any news about that in direct proportion to how much Hayden behaves himself.
How many spelling mistakes are found here?
That cover's lovely, by the way.
It is, yes. It's also nice. Little bits and pieces to notice scattered on the floor.
I particularly like the attention to detail on the Daypol figures. Green canine and the two-handed Davros as well. Particularly fine.
Yeah, and many more. I mean, you can even play guess the target front cover or guess the reference book on the floor there as well. And Paul rather kindly actually sent me the original artwork, so I've actually got the original watercolour, which I'm going to be framing hopefully later on this week, actually.
Cool.
Have we got any other things?
Sharda?
Oh, yeah, Sharda.
Oh, yes.
Sharda! Oh, hang on. Guys, did you just see that out of the window there? A mushroom cloud where Ian Levine's house used to be.
Hang on. Ian Levine's just tweeted something on his Twitter account. I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Poor Ian Levine.
I should think he'd be more than a little vexed, Ian.
Oh, yes. I'm sure he will be. I'm sure he will be. I love that there was a meme that came out pretty much as soon as the news was out there that yet another Sharda would be released by BBC Worldwide, sort of tailoring that woman in the street who goes, oh, what, another one? Oh, no, this has gone far enough. There's too much politics right now. And instead it's, obviously, there's too much Sharda. And it's true. I mean, this is... I've always thought, I mean, okay, yes, this is supposed to be, you know, this is a lost programme. This was a programme that where only one third of it was ever filmed. The location work was beautiful. Obviously, it was written by the brilliant Douglas Adams. But I do tend to think that if this story had been written by anybody else, this wouldn't have been made four times over.
Possibly. Well, I don't know, though, because it's the only Tom Baker story that's... incomplete, isn't it, that's got that amount of material actually filmed, so you can see why people won't leave it alone. But yeah, you're right, the Douglas Adams thing certainly adds a certain cachet to it that it wouldn't have if it was, say, oh, I don't know, I don't want to be rude about another Doctor Who writer, Pip and Jane Baker.
He's trying to suck up to Chibnall already, isn't he?
I'm pleased because it'll have the proper cast doing the voices for the first time. I don't think that's been done. I watched some of Ian Levine's Sharda, and I know some people really rate it, don't they? I've seen it get quite glowing reviews, but I watched it and I couldn't make it all the way through, to be honest.
More of the script is that though, or was that because of the animation? Was it just too jarring?
I think it was because of the animation and because it was still clearly not Tom Baker, but it was an animated Tom Baker. You know, it was a proper fourth Doctor. Unlike, because they did an eighth Doctor one, didn't they? Yeah, it just jarred too much for me. The style of the animation I didn't like, the voices. I haven't actually seen Sharda since I originally had the VHS of it that came with the script book back in the 90s. I think I bought when I was on holiday in Australia, actually. I don't think I even got it in this country.
Is that the double VHS box, where it's a single VHS in it? Then, a script book inside and then a big lump of polystyrene to pad it out.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I and have that.
The front of the script book's got the diamond logo cut out on the front, hasn't it?
Oh, has it? I don't remember that much.
Bizarre reason. So you've just got the outline of the diamond logo cut out on the front.
Has either of you seen the various animations and reconstructions of it that have been done over the years?
Yeah, not beyond, I've never actually not got around to watching one of them. Of Ian Levine's one.
You just got through a few minutes and that was it, did you?
Yeah, literally. Really. I just thought, I can't be bothered with this. I'll stick on a proper episode.
Now, Faithful Sisters, you may remember that in April, in podcast 74, you may think I've got an amazing memory, but I'm actually just looking back on our podcasting notes, which I have to maintain in order to construct our traditional Christmas blockbusters gold run every year. Podcast 74, what did we talk about? The Root of Hayden's Jamminess. Richard Franklin at McDonald's. Mark's Warp Warp arrives.
Oh, thank God.
Doc pisses his pants at Blackpool Doctor Who exhibition.
Oh, gold.
Happy days.
Doctor Who and the Fescan Threat by Christopher Samuel Stone. Jenny Shirt, the nicest person on social media. Oh. Alan's limerick.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's the limerick he got printed in Jenny's book, isn't it? Anyway, back in podcast 74, we started what we thought would become a regular thing, but we've just got around to doing the second one of them today, which is The Diddly Dummers Do Just a Minute. Gentlemen, are you prepared to... Are you ready to start?
Yes. Can I just grab my mascot? Oh, hang on, no, that came out completely wrong. Don't look at it. I'm just going to reach forward and grab my Sea Devil. And he's going to be my lucky mascot for this, so I'm just going to put him on my desk here. I've got Sammy the Sea Devil here. Do either of you have good luck mascots with you as well?
I've got my character options, Morbius creature.
Fantastic.
Oh. So, shall we step into the Huzeem's game show studio, chaps? I think inspired by the Young Ones version of University Challenge,
yeah.
We should each sit above each other, don't you think? And so let's go over to this end of the studio where we've got our celebrity squares structure built up. Now,
So I blew the budget on desks that we're not going to be using. Okay. Fair enough.
Mark? You sit in the centre square. Right, how do we block him, Hayden? Hayden, you go top left.
Okay, yep. Hang on a minute. Oh, rusty ladder to get up here. Oh, with a nail sticking out of it. Oh.
And I'm going bottom right.
Don't make Terence go up top.
I'm sitting on the ground floor, sir. There's absolutely no way am I going up there. It's the vertigo, you see, sir. It's the vertigo.
And in Alan's absence, we have summoned a friend of the show, Sir Terence Dix.
Hello there. If the fee is correct, I shall step in, no matter how late the invite.
Right, let's... Computer, can you start the Diddly Dum Just a Minute theme music, please? We present Doc Who, Hayden Gribble, and Mark John in Just a Minute. And as John Cage's 4 minutes 33 seconds fade away, here to tell you about it is our chairman, Terence Dix.
Hello and welcome to Diddly Down Dugs Just a Minute. Our contestants today are Doc Who.
Hello!
Hayden.
Hello!
And Mark John.
Hi!
They are going to try and speak for 60 seconds on a subject I shall give them without hesitation, repetition or deviation. We will start with the Wootons. So, Mark, if you'd like to start with the Wootons on 60 seconds. Starting now.
The Rutans were first mentioned in the Time Warrior, I think, weren't they? I can't remember.
Hesitation.
Hayden, you are an absolutely callous bugger. Mark had barely started, and yet you come in and cut him down. Okay, so that's hesitation. So, Hayden, you have 47 seconds to pick up about the Wootons. Starting now.
The Wootons were first mentioned in The Horror of Fang Rock, which was a Tom episode at the start of 1977. Oh.
That's not right, is it? So that's factually incorrect, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, they're mentioned. They're mentioned in the prologue to the novelisation of The Time Warrior.
Yeah.
Well, had that been written by the time? Yes, it must have been, wasn't it, I suppose?
Well, yeah, this. Where do we get it, I don't think. No.
Because, no, the Wootons first appeared in The Horror of Fang Rock, but they were. But I'm sure they were mentioned earlier. Hold on, I've got a Doctor Who wiki thing at my fingertips.
Hayden say mentioned or appeared?
He said mentioned.
Oh.
Oh, and maybe I am wrong. What do you think, Terence?
I don't bloody know. I wrote the bloody thing, but at the same time, I thought I came up with Wootons.
I think I might be wrong, actually. I think it was the time. Yes, it was in The Time Warrior. Yes, they were mentioned.
Ah.
So Hayden gains a point for a correct challenge. Mark, you have 40 seconds to talk about the Wootons, starting from now.
Right, the Wootons first appeared in The Horror of Fang Rock, a Doctor Who story, which was... Oh, balls.
Hesitation.
This is a bugger of a start, isn't it? This,
oh, God.
Okay, we'll have to give that one, so that's a point to Doc there. I hope someone's tallying, because I broke my bloody pencil. Okay, so Doc, you have 31 seconds to talk about the Wootons. Starting now.
The Wootons, some people think, were first mentioned in The Horror of Fang Rock, but that is actually the primary time that they appeared. They were, the Wootons I am referring to, of course, the deadly enemies of the Sontarans. And I was always rooting for the Wootons during that conflict. Oh. And I'd like to say that it was a very...
Oi! Well done there, Doc.
So Doc gains a point for speaking as the whistle went. And the next subject is... Question marks on the lapels. Doc, you start this one. And you have 60 seconds, starting from now.
Question marks on the lapels are a fashion item which was introduced, I'm pretty sure, by the Tom Baker era stylist and costumist June Hudson at the roundabout time of after the conclusion of the season which followed the Key to Time palaver.
Very rare.
Then the question marks also appeared on the lapels of the Fifth Doctor's cricket costume.
Oh, wrong.
Well, no, that was me buzzing. It wasn't that it was wrong. I thought that was a hesitation.
Yes, it was.
So, Mark, you gain a point for a correct challenge. You have 17 seconds to speak about question marks on the lapels. Starting from now.
Well, question marks on the lapels are an abomination, frankly, and shouldn't be allowed on a Doctor. In fact, we should have less question marks. It was even worse.
Deviation from correct grammar. It should be we should have fewer question marks.
Oh, now I do believe in the rule book, Doctor, that it's splitting hairs, but okay, we'll give you a point there for a correct challenge.
You swine.
Okay, so, Doc, you have 7 seconds, and you gained a point for a correct challenge. You have 7 seconds to talk about question marks on the lapels, starting from now.
And as I seem to remember, our former co-host, The Rev, persuaded his mother to sew a...
Deviation from current diddly dumb. We don't talk about previous diddly dumb.
I'm afraid you challenged at the point where the whistle went for the end of the thingy.
Oh, you know how insecure I am about the X's on this program.
The Rev's mum sewed a a question mark on the inside pocket of his school blazer.
Really?
I thought it was really sweet.
Doc, you gain another point for speaking when the whistle went. And Hayden, you start the next subject, which will be the Ood. So 60 seconds on the Ood, starting from now.
Okay, well, the Ood made their debut in the second series of the revived run of Doctor Who in the 2006 story The Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit. They were a slave race that were encountered by the 10th Doctor, as played by David Tennant, and his glamorous assistant, Rose Tyler, as played by Billy Piper, in the 8th and 9th episode...
Repetition of as played by...
Oh, you are a cunning man, my friend. You are a very cunning man.
That was really what you were going to say, that.
Yes, I'm sorry. Really, Terence.
It wasn't in the script. It was not in the script, so I will not deviate from the script. However, I will not hesitate to say or deviate from the norm. Okay, so you have a point for speaking as the whistle went, and you have 38 seconds to talk about the Ood, starting from now.
The Ood. Now, I understand, of course, that Ood is spelt with only two O's, but I consider that there may be alternate universes when the person who created the Ood may have spelt it with three of those letters. Four? Five?
Is that hesitation there?
Yes, I thought there was a bit
slightly,
of hesitation. Like
Oh, thank you. See, you're ganging up on me, Mark.
Someone's got to.
Mark has a point for correct challenge and he'll speak for 14 seconds on the Ood, starting now.
One of the things that's always struck me about the Ood is the fact that they so much resemble one of H.P. Lovecraft's most notorious creatures, Cthulhu, who also has a head that has squid-like bits coming out of a...
Ooh. I felt like I should pick up a pen and pencil there and write down, because I felt like I was in a lecture. That was beautiful, Mark. Well played. So Mark gets a point for speaking when the whistle went, and he begins the next subject, which is the aspect ratio of classic Doctor Who on modern day televisions. You have 60 seconds, starting from now.
Aspect ratio is very important, and when I'm sitting down to watch a television programme, I cannot bear it if the aspect ratio is wrong. In fact, Hayden showed me a picture where he'd set up his television and the aspect ratio was completely out, the image was stretched, and I went absolutely berserk, and I can't speak. Just even thinking about it, I can't. I'm so angry.
Well, I'm sorry, Mark, but you were stopped there. You were stopped in your tracks before you turned into a weaving loom at one point. There, I mean, modern day television. I don't own one. I still bash mine with a brick.
With a pedestal ashtray.
I think Hayden and Doc, they actually chimed in at exactly the same time there. So.
How do you?
Okay, well, if we're going to split hairs, then, Hayden, let's come back to you, so...
What? What was Hayden's challenge?
On hesitation.
He's the better looking out of you two, so, pipe down,
Hayden. No, he is not.
It's almost as if Uncle Terence knows exactly what Hayden's thinking.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, I do. Shut up, Terence. Hayden, you have a point for a quick challenge, and for the next 34 seconds, you'll talk about the aspect ratio of classic Doctor Who DVDs on modern-day televisions. Starting now.
Okay, so the aspect ratio of classic Doctor Who on modern-day televisions is something which really doesn't bother me in the slightest, to be honest. I don't think it alters my enjoyment of the programme whatsoever, even though I know that it vexes my nearest and dearest companions on the Diddly Dum podcast. Something that else that I think about the aspect ratios is that as TVs get bigger, unfortunately, so will the aspect ratios. So at one point you will see Genesis of the Daleks on little more than what looks like an letterbox.
Yes!
Well done, Hayden. Pat yourself on the back. Thank you, Terence.
I love you, Terence.
I love you too, Hayden. So, Hayden, you get a point for speaking when the round was up.
That's much better than whether the whistle went fair for Terence, isn't it? When the round was up. When the round was resolved.
Willis Bryan.
Doesn't sound anything like me at all.
And Doc, will you start the next subject and speak upon the subject of the missing episodes? You have 60 seconds starting from now.
Well, do you know, I came home tonight, looked on my bookshelf where my Doctor Who DVDs usually are, and found that I had been burgled. They had all disappeared. That means that they were missing. Oh dear, I said to myself, shall I call the police, or do I need to hurry to the Whoseum in time to start the podcast? Missing episodes? Who cares about those, I said to myself. Let me tell you who worries about such matters. Fans of Doctor who consider that the missing episodes are worth starting an omni-rumour about, and going on for miles and kilometres of paper, or virtual paper. Oh, wow!
Oh!
Beautiful,
beautiful discussion there on missing episodes.
Repetition.
What?
Oh, I can't remember that, but honestly, when you listen to it back, I can't remember what it was. I thought that's exactly
you can't
what
have that!
Mark loses a point for having a memory like a sieve.
Oh, that's not fair, but damn it, I did repeat himself. I can't remember what it was he said.
I think he said the word who quite a lot.
What I did do was I hesitated, but...
No, but I thought you also said the same word again. I thought it was something like...
I think it was.
I may have done, but you didn't know what it was, so you can't have the challenge.
So, Doc, you get a point for an incorrect challenge, and Mark, see me after class. And, Doc, you have 1 second to continue on the subject of the missing episodes, starting from now.
The missing episodes. No way.
Doc, you have a point as the whistle went while we were talking. And it's Mark's turn to start the next topic, which is the Black Guardian trilogy. Whoa. Starting from now.
The Black Guardian trilogy is 3 stories linked by the narrative device of having the Black Guardian appear in all 3 of the... It's because episodes isn't the right word, is it? It's not 3 episodes. It's...
We would have accepted stories.
No, I'd already used stories.
We wouldn't have accepted stories. I'm sorry. Oh, it was absolutely miles away. I was staring at Hayden's magnificent sea devil.
What was your challenge, Hayden?
My challenge was hesitation.
Okay, so Hayden, you have. That's a point for a correct challenge, and you have 41 seconds to talk about the Black Guardian trilogy. Starting now.
The Black Guardian trilogy is a set of 3 stories starring Valentine Dahl, who was actually in The Goons for several stories of The Goon Show. And they include More Than Dead, in which the Doc...
That was me, because you hesitated. There's too much umming, I thought.
Well, I don't think there was enough umming, actually. Okay, that's absolutely fine. Okay, so that's a quick challenge for Mark there. So, Mark, you have a point for a quick challenge. I just said that. You have 35 seconds to talk about the Black Guardian trilogy again without mucking it up. Starting now.
The Black Guardian trilogy was a... Oh, God.
Hesitation.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, dear. Okay. Shut up over there, Hayden. For goodness sakes, these are grown men who are failing. Do you laugh in the face of failure?
Apparently I do, Terence. Yeah, sorry about that.
Well, it's not good enough, is it? God. Okay, right. Sorry about that, children. Okay, so... That was a correct challenge there from... I'm just trying to read your name, Doc. Doc whom? That was a quiet challenge from Doc Hoon there. You have 21 seconds to talk about the Black Guardian trilogy, and let's hope some bugger will get to the end of talking about the Black Guardian trilogy, starting now.
Where did you get that bird? Where did you get that hat?
Deviation from sanity.
Or possibly repetition of where did you get that?
Yes, that's what I was about to buzz in with. But I didn't want another go.
Sorry, I object to that challenge. I think that challenge is valid.
Well, let's take it to our independent adjudicator. So, Soothsayer, what do you think? Will you shut up over there? I'm trying to sleep. So, moving on. Hayden, that was a correct challenge.
Go on, then.
Hayden, you have 24 seconds to talk about the Black Guardian trilogy. And bugger me, we will get there at some point this evening. Starting from now.
Mordrin Undead. Terminus. Enlightenment. Just some of the stories, in fact, all of those bloody
repetition of stories.
No, can we just get to the end of the Black Guardian bloody trilogy? It was hard enough watching all 12 episodes of them. Why did I talk? Oh, okay. I'm really starting to dislike the Black Guardian trilogy now.
Well, you shouldn't have bloody charged it then, should you?
Oh, I'm sorry, Terence. It was you, actually, Terence.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, there's not enough room in our heads, is there? Doc, you have 70 seconds to talk about the Black Guardian trilogy. Starting from now!
Terminus. Mordrin Undead. Enlightenment. Not necessarily in the same order. I can't remember. This is a series of stories that didn't excite me in the least. Because Turlo, as...
Oh, Doc, you really got into that one. I felt like you had a wheel handle on that. So, Doc, you get a point for speaking uninterrupted towards the end of that passage. Thank God for that! So, Hayden, you have 60 seconds to talk about Canine and Company, starting from now.
Well, Canine and Company, I actually didn't see up until December 2016, when I was sitting on my bed in my old flat, watching it while I was making a list of potential agents that I could chase up from the Writers and Artists Yearbook, which I'd actually booked out from my local library. And this was actually a very good...
Repetition.
Repetition? Whereabouts, Youngsha?
You said, oh God, no, don't do this, because you do something. I think, God, that's repetition. And then you say something. and it just goes straight out of my hand. Head, my short-term memory is atrocious.
Oh, don't worry about it, mate. Don't worry. We'll just say, okay, so Mark...
It was actually.
Yes, it was actually. Thank you.
So Mark gains a point for a correct challenge. And Mark, you have 37 seconds to talk about Canine and Company. Starting now.
Canine and Company was the first proper offshoot television programme from Doctor Who. Another offshoot... Oh, bugger. Sorry, I...
Just an offshoot.
Yes, I know.
Oh. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. It's not your night, Mark, is it?
It's no, just not it's your night tonight.
Don't worry, I will give you a signed copy of The Web of Fear in the evening. Don't you worry.
There's that signed by the local librarian.
Yeah.
But I do warn you, the date that you have to return it is the 31st of August, 1997.
Bugger.
Okay, so, Doc, you get a point for a correct challenge, and you have 28 seconds to talk about Canine and Company, starting now.
Canine and Company was an extremely strange story, put out mainly, I think, at the behest of Mr. J. Nathan Turner, and it featured a bizarre theme music, which listeners will remember the Diddly Dum podcast previously announced or revealed was exactly the same as the music for Chips. California Highway Patrol.
Okay, so Doc has a point for speaking when the bell went, and he has 60 seconds to talk about character options. Starting now...
When we first began to record the Diddly Dum podcast, I had a number of options for what character I would choose to adopt as the famous podcaster, Doc Who. should I be grumpy, happy, sneezy, snoozy? I can't remember the rest of the dwarves' names from Snow White. Perhaps it would be beholden to me to behooven me, I'm not sure if I got that word right there, to put on the persona of a character who was furious, a bit like Ian Levine. Maybe I could have been
What a pity there, what a pity. That was very nice, very well. Where am I? Mark, you have a point for a correct challenge there.
Hesitation.
I looked into your mind, my friend. Oh, God.
You're Dean Haydens, don't get in mine as well.
Mark gets a point for a quick challenge and he has 7 seconds. He has 8 seconds, sorry, my watch is fast. He has 8 seconds to talk about character options. Starting now.
When I was a child, I would have given my left arm for character options toys. I think they're brilliant. I love the selection you get. One of my favourites is...
Oh, well done there, Mark. You gain points for speaking last. When the topic was still going on, you did. Yes, you did indeed. So, well done, sir, well done. Okay, so I do believe we come to Hayden now, don't we? Hayden, how are you feeling tonight?
I'm in two minds, really.
Yeah, I know the feeling, I know the feeling. Hayden, you have 60 seconds to talk about Chris Marshall. Starting now.
Chris Marshall, well, what can I say about the aptly named... favourite for the role of Doctor Who, which it seems like he was for a great chunk of time, ever since Peter Capaldi had revealed that he was going to be giving up the role in January of 2017. I actually think as well that Chris Marshall might have made a very good Doctor. A very good Doctor in a programme not about Doctor Who, in fact.
Repetition, I can remember the word, it was Doctor.
Are you improving, Mark?
That's harsh.
I'm learning.
Do you think we ought to introduce a rule at some time that Doctor Who is allowed?
I'm talking about Doctor Who.
Mark, you get a point for being a callous bugger, so you get to go next. So, Mark, you get to speak for 36 seconds on Chris Marshall. Starting now.
Chris Marshall is probably most well known for appearing in My Family in the UK. And he is a comedy actor generally, although he has also played a part in Death in Paradise, which I've never actually seen on my television because I don't generally watch a lot of recent television. In fact,
Repetition of television.
Doc, you have a point for a quick challenge and 13 seconds to speak about Chris Marshall. Starting now.
In May of this year, Mark and I were sitting in the hall of the Capital Two convention to hear someone ask Kai Owen what he thought of the... Oh dear, we didn't get to finish that. I never got to say what Kai Owen actually said. Oh. Thought of Chris Marshall as a person.
Oh, gosh.
Sadly, that will have to be in the After Hours edition of Diddly Dum. So you'll have to give some money to our Patreon page to listen to that anecdote, and who knows, it might even finance a holiday aboard. So, well done, Doc, for speaking when the whistle blew. Doc Whom, you have 60 seconds to speak about the Diddly Dum podcast. Starting now.
Hello, listeners. This is the Diddly Dum podcast. It is called the fourth best podcast on Doctor Who out there, and I'm pretty sure that that's as accurate as we can make it. Back in December of 2013, it was suggested by a man whose name I will not sully the airwaves with, that there should be some people who should start a podcast on their own, and it was named Diddly Dum. This was the idea of I'm stuck.
Oh dear, Doc Whom, you were there at the inception and you buggered up the history.
Who challenged?
It was me, actually.
What was your challenge?
Hesitation.
Well done, Hayden. Thank you very much, Terence. Can you sign my Web of Fear book after this? No, you got 40 minutes signatures on that book already. So,
Hey, Dad, I think the expression is, can you stamp my web of fear book?
Can you pay the fine on my web of fear book?
So, Hayden, you have 8 seconds to talk about the Diddly Dumb podcast, starting now.
The Diddly Dumb podcast came into my life in February 2015, when Doc Hume asked me to take part in an episode.
Yeah! So, we're heading into the final furlong here, so should we have a look at the points? Doc Hume is running away with the lead with 13 points. Hayden and Mark are bringing up the rear with 8. Okay, so we are heading into the final furlong, like I said, because it's a waste, you see, you get it, you see, so. So, Mark, you have 60 seconds to talk about Barry Letts, starting now.
Barry Letts is Uncle Terence's best friend, and they often appear on DVDs together in doing commentaries and talking in the extra bits. Barry Letts was the producer. He was very famous for...
Hesitation.
Yeah, no, it's because I was about to repeat.
But thank you for talking about my extra bit so eloquently there, Mark, so thank you for that. So, Hayden, that is a point for a correct challenge, and you have 40 seconds to talk about Barry Letts. Starting now.
Barry Letts was the director and producer and occasional writer of Doctor Who. He worked on such stories as The Enemy of the World, Inferno, stepping in as a director role.
No,
I was trying to find another way of saying director and I couldn't. Oh dear. Okay.
Directorial.
Oh poo. Okay, fair enough.
Doc, you have 25 seconds and a point for quick challenge. Oh, talking about my dear friend Terence Dicks. No.
Barry Letts.
That's me, sir, that's me. Talking about my good friend Barry, starting now.
I asked a director, producer, come writer friend of mine what I should talk about during this topic. And, would you believe, Barry said, talk about me. I have read Barry Letts's diary, but actually, no, it's not. It's the first volume of his memoirs. And I can't remember what that was called, but...
Oh, well done there, Doc Hume. Yes, you were talking yet again when...
I was babbling.
You was babbling away about Barry and I, and that was absolutely lovely, because, you know, Barry was a great person. And that started getting a bit dark, so I'm very sorry about that. So we'll take the bed out and just say, so, Hayden, you have 60 seconds to talk about the Western Warrior Robot, starting now.
Well, the Western Warrior Robot was a contraption constructed...
Deviation.
Sorry?
Deviation. The subject was the Waston Warrior Robot. Hayden's talking about the Raston Warrior Robot.
That's incorrect, and all you were doing is taking the piss. So, Hayden, you get a point for an incorrect challenge, and you have 54 seconds to talk about the Waston Warrior Robot. Thank you very much, Doc. Starting now.
The Raston Warrior Robot is by far the best thing to come out of The Five Doctors, the 20th anniversary special, which was broadcast on the 25th of November 1983 in the UK to coincide with Children in Need. The Raston Warrior Robot actually is there to thwart the Third Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith from getting to the Tower of Rassilon, as in the script, Terence Dix had been pointed out by then script editor Eric Saywood on the programme that the Third Doctor and Sarah got to the tower far too... I was doing so well there as well.
Oh, congratulations, Mark.
It's...
You've won a holiday in the Elgolf!
and a Bruce bonus!
It's repetition of the word third.
Repetition of the word third. Oh, well, you could have also had the repetition of the word shower, doctor, and tower. Okay, so, Mark, you have 18 seconds to talk about the Waston Warrior Robot. Starting now.
I remember seeing the Raston Warrior Robot in The Five Doctors on television when it was broadcast, and it was indeed one of the most exciting monsters that I'd ever seen in an episode. And it was essentially a man in a tight-fitting suit with a silver mask. So looking back on it, it's...
Oh, well done there, Mark. And it sounded like you were almost just discussing one of J&T's after-show parties there. Anyway, well done. So, I've just noticed something, gentlemen. The meter's about one out on my car. So, we'll have to get through a few more rounds and then we'll have to call it a day, unfortunately. Mark has a point, full speaking as the whistle went. And Hayden, you have 60 seconds to talk about Philip Madoc. Starting now.
Philip Madoc was a Welsh actor who appeared in Doctor Who across a number of years and a number of stories, starring in The Crotons with the second Doctor, Patrick Troughton, in 1968, with Tom Baker in The Brain of Morbius in 1976, and also starring again with the actor who played the fourth Doctor in The Power of Kroll in 1978. He was also a very well-liked and very respected actor around the BBC, who also starred in The Last of the Mohicans and famously the U-boat captain in Dad's Army. Your name will also be on the list, Mark John.
Repetition of starred.
And actor and 19.
Yeah.
And Philip and Madoc and Doctor Who.
No, Philip Maddock's on the car.
And Wen.
No, Wen's a little word.
Yeah.
Well, I can think of a few more little words as well there.
Yeah, four letter ones.
Okay, so, well done, Mark. That's a correct point for a correct challenge. That's a correct point as well, I hasten to point out. He has 26 seconds to talk about Philip Madoc, starting now.
Philip Madoc appeared in one of my favourite ever Doctor Who stories, Brain of Morbius. And he also starred in The Power of Kroll. But in the former one of those, he played someone called Solon, who'd cut off the arm of his assistant and had been keeping it in a chest. And
repetition of keeping.
Yeah.
And it's also completely impossible to keep your arm in your chest, Mark, unless you fold it up and lick both sides like an envelope. Okay, so this is the final round, because I can just see my car being impounded in the far distance.
What colour's your car?
It's red. So, Doc, you have a point for a correct challenge, and you have 3 seconds. You've done a Freud on us. And would you speak on, for 3 seconds, Philip Madoc? Go!
Philip Madoc was a very grand, apocalyptic Welsh actor.
Well done there, Doc. That was a perfect summing up. I wish that you'd had written his Wikipedia page. Okay, so this is the final round. So,
it'd be a bit short, wouldn't it?
How'd you spell Wikipedia? Is it R-I-K-I?
Okay, so here we go. This is the final countdown. The final end, as it were. Not my words, David Whittaker's. The moment has been prepared for. So, Doc Whom, it's your round. Who'd have buggered it? Hayden, you've got 10. Mark's got 11. Dog's got 16.
What? Okay.
This is an outrage.
Oh, I have 26 once I've edited it.
Okay, Doc. So, you have 60 seconds to talk about all of the 13 Doctors to have played the world so far on television, but you're not allowed to mention their names. Starting now.
All of the 13 Doctors to have played the role so far on the television, but without mentioning their names. Well, there was the first of the Doctors, the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, 11, 12, and 13. You will notice, of course, faithless listeners, faithless colleagues, and faithful quizmaster.
Repetition.
Yes.
Faithless twice.
That was going so well as well. It's only because you were getting outraged, the two of you, so I was feeling guilty.
Okay, so Mark, you have 29 seconds to talk about the 13 actors who played the Doctor without mentioning their names. Go!
Well, the first actor who played the Doctor was a man who'd been in Brighton Rock. The second actor to have played the Doctor was...
You used the word actor.
Yeah, but you put it in the question now.
Oh, it's in the bloody title.
The word in the title is actors.
It is. Yes, well done, Hayden. Yes.
What? No, that's not right, is it?
Yep.
13 actors, you said actor.
You've used the singular.
That's mean, isn't it?
Oh, what? What? Wow. Wow. That's it, I'm going. Bye.
And as Mark pisses on my cornflakes, Hayden, you have 17 seconds to talk about the 13 actors to have played the role of the Doctor, but without mentioning their names. Starting now.
The 13 actors who have played the role of Doctor Who, but without mentioning their names, starts with the first actor to have... I've just done exactly what Mark did.
Yeah.
So I'm stopping myself there. Oh, this is harder than I thought. Sorry, Terence.
It's okay, don't worry. You can give me that level of feedback. Oh.
You said actors and then actor.
Yeah.
And no one challenged anyway, and it's just ended, so you...
Oh, okay, so Hayden buggered up at the end, but nobody noticed. That's great. So Hayden, you get a point for speaking as the whistle went. And the final scores are, in last place, oh, in joint last place, with 12 points each, is Mark John and Hayden Gribble. And in first place, with 16 points, so it was quite close in the end, and looking very smug indeed, whilst he lights his cigar, is Doc Hume.
Well done, hooray!
And thank you very much for joining us for this next, for this lovely episode of Just a Minute. I was Terence Dix. And I've got to go and get my cube back from being impounded. I have 15 minutes to remove my cube. Bye!
Bye, Uncle Terence.
Bye, Terence. Oh, look at him go.
Oh, but he hasn't done the sign-off yet, has he? We're going to have to call him back.
It's okay, I'm still here.
Well, I think that went too badly, actually.
I think that was relatively fun.
So, to sign us out, Brucey.
Don't dump bodies into the river, bodies don't dump.
Uncle Brucey, we have any ships in Section 27?
It's a trap.
Bye, bye, everyone.
Wait a minute, sorry, sorry, I completely forgot and I've got to do my last soundbite. Have this already gone?
Yes, I'm afraid so. Oh, bye, bye.
Bye.
Till next time. Never coming here again.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dum Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at diddlydum, on Twitter at diddly_dum, or email us at diddlydumpodcast@yahoo.co.uk. Diddly Dum, meaty, not runny. Top breeders recommend it because it's solid nourishment for the ears.